it began as a one-man march from Ankara to Istanbul. 25 days later, it swelled to hundreds of thousands of protesters. Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, leader of the main opposition party, CHP, began his over 400-kilometer trek to protest the jailing of one of his lawmakers. Thousands of Turks have joined him, calling for democracy to be restored.
More than 7 tons of ivory tusks seized in Hong Kong, a pile of contraband with a $9 million price tag. The tusks are thought to have been taken from about 720 elephants. City authorities looking into where the ivory was headed, most likely nearby countries.
You know, I think that Germany is emerging as the leader in Europe, certainly, and maybe even the leader of the West. Angela Merkel is the most experienced leader outside of Putin. She's very highly regarded. You're going to see trade disagreements here. But, you know, we've had those types of disagreements, Europe and the United States, for the last 40, 50 years. It hasn't affected the basis of the alliance. I think what's more important here is that President Trump get into the mainstream with France and Germany to contain Russian power in Eastern Europe.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Glad you're here on this Monday, July 10th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. And we're here for another Monday. Another business week is underway. Lots to cover this morning. A little bit later on in the program, we'll be talking a little bit about the jobs report from last month, more about the economy, how it's faring. Mark Hamrick will be here from Bankrate.com. And in just a minute, our CEO spotlight. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Asian shares are generally advancing this morning following Wall Street's gains ahead of quarterly earnings and testimony to the U.S. Congress by the Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index up about 1% this morning. Tokyo's Nikkei up almost as much, helped by a weaker yen. The Shanghai Composite lost a little bit of ground. Sydney's index added some. Seoul added some as well. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen testifies Wednesday and Thursday before U.S. lawmakers. Investors are looking for signs of how the Fed might react to the latest jobs and inflation information. In this country, Dow futures are flat this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are pointing up. Gold and silver are trading lower. Oil is at $43.86 a barrel. In Europe, markets are generally higher. The FTSE is up about a quarter. The DAX and the CAC are also up this morning. The DAX up about 56 points. It's good for about a half a percent. Some other stories that we've been watching for you overnight. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says the Trump administration isn't considering a tax increase on wealthier Americans, knocking down a report that White House advisor Steve Bannon had been floating the idea as a way to pay for tax cuts for middle-income taxpayers. Mnuchin said yesterday that he's never heard Steve Bannon say that on ABC's This Week. Also this morning, a new report finds that nation's home ownership rate appears to be stabilizing, but African Americans aren't sharing in that recovery. A report by Harvard University's Joint Center for Housing Studies shows the black home ownership rate of 42% was nearly 30 percentage points lower than that of whites in 2016. The center says the disparity between whites and blacks has never been this high in the 70-plus years worth of data. Well, starting tomorrow, there's a new company in Chicago. It's been sort of operating under the radar, but a full launch is coming. It's called Tavala, and we're happy to have the CEO in our spotlight this morning. It's a food prep company, but it has a twist. There's an oven involved, and let's talk a little bit about it this morning with CEO David Rabe. He's with us this morning in our spotlight. David, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you for having me.
So good you're here. And by the way, we should let people know if you hear a ding in the background. We've actually have one of the ovens plugged in, and we're cooking one of the meals that we're going to be talking about. And so by the time our interview's over, hopefully that'll be done. But let's start. Tell us a little bit about the company and where you stand right now.
Yeah, so our company name is Tavala, and what we have built is a meal subscription service in tandem with a smart oven. So basically the way it works is every week we create this beautiful menu of new dishes that are pre-prepped. They get shipped to your doorstep. And we also have created this very, very technologically savvy oven that cooks those meals to perfection. So you get your meals. Every meal comes with a barcode. You scan the barcode on the oven. The oven is connected to the internet, so it downloads the recipe from the cloud, and it cooks your meal perfectly.
It's almost like it's taken you completely out of the equation to reduce any possible mistake, I'm guessing, is the goal, right?
Yeah, no mistakes and no work, but at the end of the day, you still get something that's healthy, incredibly delicious, and incredibly convenient.
There's a lot setting Tavala apart from the others in this space. We've heard a lot about meal prep companies. One just went public recently, Blue Apron. How are you different, and how would you like to have the public see you as being different?
Yeah, so oftentimes we'll describe ourselves as similar to Blue Apron, mm-hmm. except that we do the prep, the oven does the cooking, and there's no cleaning. And at the end of the day, the product comes out consistently the same across the country in homes everywhere.
There's a bit of difference in terms, too, of the technology involved. Those other companies, you don't necessarily have to buy an oven with them. Why did you decide to go down that road? Why include that?
For a couple of reasons. So one, we can ensure that the end product comes out perfect every time because we control every piece of the puzzle. And two, the oven has a lot of power on its own. So while it's designed to create our meals, it also can be used for your own food. So we've built a pretty comprehensive mobile app that teaches you how to use the oven, that has presets for your own meal. So let's say you want to make a piece of salmon. You put the piece of salmon in the oven, hit the salmon button on the app, and it will cook it just right. And that's your own salmon. The oven can also be used to toast bread and reheat food really effectively.
David, hang on with us. We're going to continue with David Rabbi, the CEO of Tavala. Their big launch is tomorrow. In our CEO spotlight this morning, we'll have more on the technology and more on the company as the opening bell continues for this Monday.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. The rally was back on Friday with investors driving the Dow Jones up 94 points to 21,414. The S&P 500 advanced 15.5 points. The NASDAQ closed 63.5 points higher at 61.53. The government's latest employment report showed hiring bouncing back in June, with employers adding 222,000 new jobs. Still, wage growth remains modest despite a low unemployment rate, which economists say should have companies fattening salaries. Tomorrow is officially Amazon Prime Day, but the online shopping site will start offering some bargains this evening. Other retailers, Kohl's, JCPenney, and Macy's among them, are rolling out their own internet deals to counter Amazon's. And Tesla co-founder Elon Musk has tweeted out photos of the first Model 3 to roll off the assembly line. By December, Tesla expects to be producing 20,000 vehicles a month and selling each at about $35,000. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. In our CEO spotlight this morning is David Rabbi. He's the CEO of Tavala, which has a full launch tomorrow. They've sort of been operating under the radar until now, but they're in full gear tomorrow. We were talking a little, David, before the break about the technology, the oven. Do you think this might hinder people subscribing to your service because they already have an oven or some other technology like this?
Sure. So the oven is $399. And the way we're kind of positioning it to folks is think of it as a super high-end toaster oven that can also steam and is also designed to cook our meals. So our goal, and this is what we've seen with our earliest customers, is people subscribe to our meals and, you know, they really enjoy them for three nights a week. But then the rest of the week, they'll use our oven to experiment with their own meals. They'll use our oven to toast bread. And they've found that this now becomes the appliance they use far and away more than anything else in their kitchen.
Yeah, and one of the selling points, too, I would think in thinking about this is right now in my house, I don't have anything that's smart. Nothing in my kitchen is smart yet. This would be a nice foray into that area.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's a lot of different appliances and products where they don't really need to be smart, and it's just a feature that these companies will throw in. For us, it's crucial to what we're doing because every week we're releasing new meals, and each of those meals has a custom recipe. And you as a customer don't have to do anything to enjoy those new recipes because we're able to basically send that information through the cloud.
Let's talk a little bit about the meals. How are they prepared? By whom are they prepared? And how does that set you apart from the competition?
Sure. So we have a team here in Illinois, a production staff that makes the meals once a week. The meals get shipped all across the country. The meals are designed by our chief culinary officer, who trained at NOMA in Copenhagen and actually spent time here in Chicago at Alinea and Modo and some other local restaurants. And basically, the way we design our menus is around clean ingredients and bold flavors. So you'll look at the labels, and they might have a lot of ingredients, but it's all ingredients that you or your grandmother would recognize. And we have food from all different countries from over the world.
And the subscription model is what? Talk us through that.
So it's basically three meals for $36 or six meals for $72. Every week there's five new meals, as well as a core menu that doesn't change. You can choose or we'll choose for you.
And each of the meals are what in terms of calories and size?
So calories, they're all roughly 500 to 600 calories. Some will go a little bit above, some will go a little bit below. And they serve one person, but the oven can cook multiple meals at once. So if you're a couple or a family, you can cook multiple meals together.
The space is interesting here in terms of the different types of companies out there doing something like this. What are the challenges in not only setting yourself apart, but growing that subscription base?
I think you kind of hit on it. The challenge is convincing people to buy our product and understand that the food is great. And we've been working on this for over 2 years, so we've now seen it dozens and dozens of times. People will come into our office or we'll do a demo, and everyone is skeptical because people assume that prepackaged food isn't going to be good. They don't know how the technology is going to work. And as soon as people have one or two bites of our food, it just clicks.
Yeah.
Because the way what makes it really special is that we control every little piece, so we can ensure that the salmon that we ship to you is the exact right size, the sauce that we make is exactly right, and it's going to cook perfectly every time. So we know our miso glazed salmon tastes just as good in Florida as it does in our test kitchen.
When you watch the IPO of Blue Apron and you see what's happening with Amazon and Whole Foods, what does that tell you about how this area is either heating up or changing?
I think it's all great for us. So I think with Blue Apron, we have a lot of early customers that used to be customers of Blue Apron, but at the end of the day, they don't want to cook three nights a week.
Right.
It's not that convenient. They're tired when they get home from work. And our solution offers the same delicious, healthy end product without any work. So for us, the fact that Blue Apron has kind of opened up the market to understanding grocery delivery is a big win. And what we want are the customers that have stopped using that service.
The other part about this is that, you know, you mentioned that it's either people coming home that may not have the time to do the other thing. But it seems like with the calorie count there, you might also be appealing to people who want to watch what they're eating and maybe even eat healthier and with losing weight.
Absolutely. I mean, our core demographic are people, you know, 30 to 40, working hard, young families or about to have families. But we also have empty nesters that are super concerned about portion control and tracking everything. And this makes their lives really easy because they know three nights a week they're going to get called a beautiful piece of fish. It's going to be 500 calories. They're getting their vegetables and they don't have to worry about it. And they can just check the box.
Recently, seed funding. What are the other challenges in terms of spinning this up and getting off the ground?
The biggest challenge is really that we're building three businesses at once. So we're building a physical appliance.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, all these appliances are connected. So we have a big software team that's kind of writing code to enable the oven and enable the app. And we have a whole food team because we have a whole food system. So getting all of those pieces working together and collaborating has been one of the bigger challenges and has been one of the hurdles, but we're over that now. The system works, and we've been shipping food to early customers for the last couple months, and the early results are great.
You have experience in this yourself, but how important is it having others on your team to help you with these other pieces and fit them all together?
Incredibly. I mean, I can't do the vast majority of what our team does, and we have people with domain expertise in everything from creating recipes to understanding data infrastructure to writing mobile app codes to manufacturing in China. So all across the board, we have a pretty diverse skill set on the team.
And I would imagine, too, that as you spread across the country, you're going to need to add people to that. So this could be a potential job creator.
Yeah, I mean, we've grown really, really fast. A year ago, we were about 5 or 6 people. Now we're 15 full-time, but if you count part-time and intern and production staff, we're almost 30. And one of the things we're proud of is we've recruited a ton of people from the local universities. So we've got a lot of people from the University of Illinois. I went to Chicago Booth. We've recruited some folks from there, from Northwestern. And we take a lot of pride in that, especially because we did a small stint in Silicon Valley and then moved back to Chicago about a year ago.
Some questions, too, that I'm sure people might ask. They'll say, well, we've been talking about single servings here, but what if you have a family? Can you sort of upscale the subscription model to a family?
Absolutely. So right now you can cook 1 or 2 servings at once. Over time, we will add more larger size servings, and we can do that within the existing oven. So it's just a matter of adding more SKUs on the food side. And some of our earlier customers are families of 4 or 5 or 6 who just have, you know, they go through so much food in a week that having 6 meals in the fridge that they can count on that even their kids can cook because it's so easy is a huge lifesaver.
Talk to me about the challenges of coming up with new and creative food. I would imagine that would be, for your chef staff, the biggest headache is to be unique every day.
It is challenging. Our head of culinary operations really has trained all across the world, and so he has a ton of experience developing very different recipes and menus for really high-end establishments, for mass market. And so he brings that hat to the menus we're designing. And, you know, up to now, we've had a ton of variety in the meals, and that's kind of one of the things that our customers really love.
What about as you grow? Will this be mainly an urban thing, or will people in smaller communities be able to take part in this too?
So what's interesting is we started shipping to our earliest customers about 2 months ago, and we have food customers in 42 states. So it's not just San Francisco, Chicago, New York. It's all over the country, because this dinner is a pain point for a lot of folks, for, you know, whether it's time or energy or price or health. There's all these reasons why people struggle with dinner on a weekly basis. And we can solve that without you having to really sacrifice anything.
Does the model work without the oven? If for whatever reason people say, you know, I kind of like this idea, but I don't want to buy this oven. You can't really use it with your own microwave, can you?
Yes and no. I mean, the food is raw, clean ingredients. So I'm not going to tell you, we send you a piece of salmon and you could, you know, put it on the grill and cook it. It'll be okay. The magic, though, is in all of the prep that we do and controlling what the oven does. So take our miso glazed salmon with edamame brown rice and broccoli, for example. The glaze alone has 7 or 8 ingredients that we prep and make for you. The brown rice we saute and marinate in a special sauce. We blanch the broccoli just right. So we do a lot of work on the front end, and then the oven does all the cooking. So if you wanted to cook that on your own, you'd have to bake the broccoli, you'd have to steam the fish, then broil the fish, you'd have to make the glaze, you'd have to do all these different pieces with many appliances. Our appliance does all of that for you.
This way you can sit, as we're doing now, and just sort of have a glass of wine and watch it and wait for it.
Yes, and that's a really common thing our customers have told us. It's like, wow, I just found 45 minutes in my schedule all of a sudden. I'm drinking a little more, but hey, it's great.
Well, I know you're probably wrapped up in all of this and getting it going for the now, but if you had to look down the road maybe 5 years or more, where do you think this is going to be? Where do you think your company's going to be?
I mean, our goal is to be in 5 years, millions of homes across the country and serving food to people everywhere. And in the early phases, we've already heard from our customers telling us, you know, you've made our lives better and easier. And that is really the overarching mission. We want to make it easier for people to eat better. And we think we can do that at real scale.
And you've come at a good time when we see all of the different reports and studies, surveys showing people are going to the grocery store less and relying more on these types of services.
That's right, yeah. But it's still very early days. So we think the market opportunity is really, really big.
Now, will the oven ding and send us a note on the phone, or how will we try
to? Yes, both things. The oven will make a noise, and your phone will give you a push notification when it's done.
All right, David, best of luck to you and Tavala.
Thank you so much.
All right, David Rabbi is the CEO of Tavala. Again, the big oven launch tomorrow, the big full launch tomorrow. You can find more online at tavala.com, T-O-V-A-L-A.com. We're going to let you know how the pasta that we're making this morning turns out a little later in the program. It is 5:30. This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, tech trends, and urgent text from your bank, watch out, you might get smished. By now you've heard of phishing, scammers' use of email to extract personal information out of the unwary. Smishing is similar, except that it relies on text, SMS messages. In the typical scenario, the text is from your bank.
There's a problem with your account. Please verify that you're the account owner. Send us your account number and your PIN number.
Tech expert Nick Francesco says his standard answer is
no.
Ian Alheimer has seen smishing firsthand.
I actually have a few family members that have done that before, and they've been scammed out.
While older people have been heavily targeted by email and telephone scams, con artists have figured something out about texting.
Most of the younger generation are not as cynical as my generation.
Whether it's phishing by email or smishing by text, Nick Francesco says, don't fall for it. With Tech Trends, Jim Ryan, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 5:40 here on our Monday edition of the opening bell. Glad you're with us. On Friday, the Labor Department reported on jobs for June. 222,000 jobs created, according to the jobs report. 4.4% is our unemployment rate. We thought we'd bring in Mark Hamrick this morning at Bankrate.com. He's a senior economic analyst there. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Steve.
Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about this. I know everybody was watching the wages part of the jobs report. Everybody thought it would go up a little bit more. Why isn't it?
Well, I think it's the same old reason, and I think it's really the most disappointing part of this report, and that's been the case for some time. All kinds of reasons, really. Part of it also might be something that we don't talk about as much recently as we did a couple of years ago, and that is perhaps the kinds of jobs that were being added. When we see a lot of food and drinking establishments, leisure and hospitality, those aren't necessarily high-paying jobs. But I think the two most persistent threads here really are, number one, globalization, the fact that businesses have the opportunity to substitute for American workers, and in some cases they'll substitute abroad. Another substitution which can be made is technology or automation. And so if you think about Tesla, for example, the remarkable automobile company that Elon Musk has been putting together for some time now, we're not talking about legions of workers in a manufacturing facility, as would have been the case, let's say, in the years after World War II. And that's one of the challenges, in a sense, that manufacturing is dealing with, and it's a challenge and an opportunity from the standpoint of, well, they don't need workers as much as they used to. If you're a business person and you're investing or you're a manager, that's good. But from our standpoint of hoping that we can get more Americans back to work, that's not so good.
Yeah, and it's sort of indicated, too, by the data, manufacturing jobs created, not as many as people would have hoped there either.
Yeah, 1,000 jobs added last month, according to the report, in the goods-producing sector. Total, only 25,000. We had mining, logging, and construction representing the other jobs added there. But, you know, that's one of the larger numbers, that total number of goods-producing jobs added, one of the larger numbers we've seen in that category for some time. So that tells us we should probably temper our expectations there as well.
So where were the jobs created? Where did we see the big chunk of these 222,000 get created?
Well, food and drinking establishments that I mentioned before, government added more jobs. We're not really sure what's going on there. There could have been some statistical fluke things represented there, in the sense that then you get into complicated things which will make your eyes sort of gloss over that have to do with the timing of the report, where you may have had more teaching jobs show up in the report. But in terms of the real jobs that were added too, we saw health care. In many ways, they were the same old sectors showing up in this report: business and professional services, sort of typical white-collar jobs. So, you know, you can't really quibble as much about the way that the jobs were added across categories here last month. I think we'd like to continue to see as many as 200,000 jobs added a month. That may be a heavy lift, though, in terms of actually seeing that in a number of months on a sustained basis.
The other part of this, too, is the jobless rate ticking up. We're seeing people actually get off the sidelines and go back into the job force. That is generally a positive sign, isn't it?
Yeah, labor force participation still remains remarkably low, and there are a lot of things going on there. This is a percentage that is contained within the report, representing the percentage of people who are either working or looking for work. And overall, we had not only the number of unemployed rise, but we had the number of employed rise. So more people looking for work, more people finding work, but also the reason why we had the unemployment rate rise slightly to 4.4% was more people were unemployed. And there are demographic issues here. A lot of it has to do with retiring baby boomers. We have fewer women entering the labor force now than in decades past. We also have a good dynamic or two, and that is that we have high school student and college age individuals remaining in school, whereas in the past they might have jumped into the labor force, and they would have been represented in the report as well.
Mark, later this week, Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve Chair, testifies before Congress. She'll no doubt get questions about the jobs report and inflation data. What do you think is going to be the highlight of what she tells Congress about how the Fed is proceeding?
Well, she follows a pretty established pattern in the way that she addresses what's going on with the economy. And I think, you know, in trying to translate for people what the central bank might be thinking about, for example, this report, I really want to say, first of all, they would look at these numbers and say, effectively, aha, it's exactly what we thought, in that the first quarter was weak. Yellen has, as well as her colleagues, have said that that weakness was likely, quote-unquote, transitory, their fancy way of saying it was temporarily weak, and that there was probably an acceleration in economic growth in the second quarter, and that they would expect growth to be pretty steady here in the second half of the year. The one thing the Fed is watching closely is their so-called inflation target, which they would expect to get back to the 2% level. It just simply hasn't. And when we see wage growth kind of remaining in this less than satisfying pattern with the average hourly earnings up 2.5%, as we said earlier, that's something that could possibly knock them off the path of a steady state of rate increases over the next couple of years. We'll just have to wait and see. But the Fed has basically forecast, and obviously Yellen in that group, that they'll probably raise rates one more time between now and the end of the year. December seems to be the best bet, and then perhaps three more rate increases over the next, each of the next 2 years, and that would raise borrowing costs for all of us, and possibly even then also lead to better savings rates over time.
Yeah. We'll get to know whether or not any of this is coming to fruition pretty quickly with more data expected in the next couple of weeks. What would be the most important of that we might see?
Well, I think you always, you know, these jobs reports are among the most covered things for a reason, and that is that it's probably the most important snapshot of the economy that we get in a given month. The Federal Reserve's Beige Book survey, which comes out 2 weeks before each Fed meeting, so we'll be getting one of those here before long. That gives us an idea how things are shaping up on a regional basis, and also the sort of twin sisters of inflation, both the Consumer Price Index and the Producer Price Index. Those are the two monthly readings on inflation, and if we could see a little tick up in either of those two, not too much, but just a little bit, then that will probably indicate then that the Fed will stick on this rate-raising path. So I'd say the inflation readings, the job report readings, the regional Fed roundup, that's a pretty good group to look at.
All right. Mark, thanks for being back with us here on the Opening Bell. Good chatting with you.
It's always my great pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Mark Hamrick is a senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. You can check out their website and follow his blog, too, for more on the economy.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 551 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are weak to up, a high of 6 so far this morning. The S&P up about 4, NASDAQ futures up about 22. Generally, other markets are mixed to lower this morning as we head toward the opening bell. Our first segment this morning, we were in the CEO spotlight with Tovala of Chicago and David Rabbi. We had in the background going the oven, cooking our food, and the ding went off while we were talking. Bennett Wakenight is the producer here of the opening bell. Bennett, you've been eating some of that food. What does it taste like?
It is very good at this time of the morning, regardless of, you know, if breakfast food or whatever. But it was incredibly well cooked. It was a pasta dish. It was very creamy, but it also had a nice crust on the top, which was impressive because it was just 16 minutes straight through, and it was cooked exactly how it needed to be cooked.
Yeah, and the thing about it that I noticed is just when you microwave a meal at home, there's not that restaurant quality to it.
Right.
This had, like, the restaurant quality to it. It felt like it had been made in, you know, an oven at a restaurant. Very delicious.
Yeah, that was the surprising part. And what was also nice was there was a little bit of customization at the end where you had the sauces. There was a lemon basil vinaigrette, I think, you were able to pour on. There was also some grated Parmesan that you could add on to, you know, to let it melt a little bit on the top. Of course, you could add your own ingredients as well. But there was kind of that little spectacle of personalization you can add to the end.
And the best part about it is we had the oven in the corner of the studio. You couldn't hear it at all.
Yeah,
it was silent.
I thought it was really going to ding and disrupt, but it was a small little beep beep that's all it did. And then the went off on the app, and next thing we know, we're eating.
All right, finish up the pasta for breakfast in there, Bennett.
Oh, I will.
Tavala Food is how you can follow Tavala on Twitter at Tavala Food. That's T-O-V-A-L-A Food on Twitter. Tavala on Twitter or online. Tavala.com is where you find them online. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities this morning. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Back from a fun, successful motor trip to Westby, Wisconsin for high school class reunion, family reunion, a country music concert, and some good Scandinavian food. It was a delightful weather weekend and had a good trip. But now we get back to work. Let's look at the wholesale pork prices moving in the opposite direction Friday, with the pork cut up $1.12 to $104.96 per hundredweight. That's the highest in more than 2 years, and prices for pork bellies used to make bacon up $5.73 Friday to $206.96 a hundredweight, and that's near the record set back in April of 2014. Meanwhile, cattle futures also mostly higher when we traded on Friday, so this is where we're starting today, with July lean hogs up 20 cents a hundredweight, 91.72. August live cattle up 30 cents at 114.77. And the August feeder cattle contract up 87 cents at 145. Turning to the grain market, well, weather is the overriding factor there, and we'll be looking at the weekly crop conditions report due out this afternoon to see if there's any major change in the condition of the corn and soybean crops. And we're certainly into county fair season now, so check your area and calendar and get out there and enjoy a county fair. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, July 10th, 2017. Federal Reserve will release consumer credit data for May. Last month, the Fed reported that American consumers had increased their borrowing at the slowest pace in April than they had in almost 6 years. Today's report is at 2 o'clock Chicago time. Also today, researchers at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis have found that a malaria drug approved for use in pregnant women also blocks transmission of the Zika virus in pregnant mice. Congress returns after the Independence Day work period. No votes are expected in the House. They're expected to start taking up, at least to continue discussing, the health care bill. And a new survey finds the best tippers are men, Republicans, Northeasterners, and those who use credit or debit cards. Creditcards.com has released a survey today, finds that all of these groups top a median of 20%, tip a medium of 20% at restaurants, that according to creditcards.com. Those are some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, July 10th, 2017.